Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're radio shy, you can email me at bonkaye@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my very special co-hostess for tonight, I do want to make the announcement that I can't believe it's already July, and we're only weeks away from our California Healing Weekend. And I'm getting really excited about it. You know, the women are starting to line up to come to California, where it's going to be a really healing weekend. We have some people who are what I call our veterans who are going to be there to give you all kinds of good advice on steps that will help you heal. We have some people who are just new to this coming to the Healing Weekend to look for support and strategies. We'll be having a sharing day. We'll be having a workshop day on different strategies to help you heal the best. And when you're going through a situation like this, I know you feel so alone. You feel so isolated. You think you're the only one in the world. There are so many new issues you have to deal with that other people don't understand, that only, you know, your straight sisters can understand, and that's what this meeting is about, finding that acceptance and the understanding so that your life can move on. So if you'd like to join me, please let me know. There's information on my website at gayhusbands.com. of a link to write to me so you can get the information for yourself. And whether you live on the West Coast or if you just live somewhere else and want to join us, we have women from Canada and from other places around the world. So it's really important that you heal wherever you are and make the effort to make the trip. It's going to be a great weekend. We have a group rate for the hotel. It's 5 minutes from the airport. You'll be able to get a shuttle bus right there within 5 minutes. They have a free shuttle going back and forth. And the hotel is great. The accommodations are great. I stayed there a couple of months ago just to make sure that it would be a wonderful place for us to be at a great group rate. So if you're interested in more information, please let me know and I'll make sure I hook you up. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my co-hostess for tonight, Suzette Hinton. Good evening, Suzette.
Hi, Bonnie. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I hear you're doing good, too.
Yes, I am.
Because you have good news coming, right?
Yes, I'm all abuzz with wedding plans.
Wedding plans. You know, when I hear that, I get so excited, Suzette, because I think back to when our very first encounter together a number of years ago, and this would have been the last thing on your mind, right?
Oh, the very last.
Uh-huh.
I might have started cussing if somebody had a mystery.
I mean, you know, who would have ever believed that you could be this happy, right?
So true. I have to pinch myself. It's like you are just, it's just like you're in another world, and you know, you've been in it long enough now to know that you're not dreaming, you know, because it's been 3 years, we're going on 4 years, and it's just getting better and better. This is just something new for me, and I'm loving it. I am loving it.
Because you and I have both known what it's like to be in relationships that start out good and end up bad, right?
Yep, we know that.
But it's been hard to find a good relationship that starts out good and gets better. That's the key.
Indeed. It was a desire. I wanted to meet someone that the more I got to know them, it would make me fall in love with them over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a dream. And to know that I'm experiencing that in my reality just blows my mind.
Well, I'll tell you, if anybody's earned it, it's you.
Oh,
but
thank you.
Not just
thank you.
We've all earned it, but you certainly did pay your dues because you really had a hard time not only once but twice. You know,
I know,
and trying
right?
to make things work right, you know, which brings me to another point. You know, I would like to talk to you about this. I was waiting for you to come back on the show because you have a really good Christian viewpoint growing up in a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's always a big conflict for a lot of our women, you know, who are really struggling with this, as it is for many Christian men who are also struggling with it. You know, my heart goes out to them because I get letters all the time from Christian men who really are trying to do the right Christian thing, but they're having such difficulty. And, you know, they feel that they've been taught their whole lives that this is what they have to do, not feeling like it's really an option not to do it, hoping that if they love someone enough, it'll all change, and it never does. So, you know, I'm the one who gives them permission to do the right thing. That's what I like to do. I give you permission, do the right thing. But here's what I brought up in my newsletter, so I'd like to see your thoughts on this. In this month's newsletter, there were several, you know, different things I had in there, some of which got, you know, loads of responses that we'll talk about a little later. But I put an article in there about one of our members who I'm very fond of, wonderful young lady who I've met, you know, a number of times. And her ex-husband, who they grew up in a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she was devastated when she found out about her ex-husband. And, of course, she had to struggle greatly also because of her Christian upbringing, where you're taught that marriage is forever, that homosexuality is not necessarily an issue that would separate you. The man just has to learn how to control it. And you have to be a good wife and be there for him because he's really trying his best. And if you're not supportive, how's he supposed to do his best? So she grew up in that kind of an environment. And when she found out, of course, she was devastated. But the point is that eventually, you know, that marriage had to split up. He has HIV. And, you know, she was just so devastated from that. And he was never honest with her. She found out accidentally when a paper came to her from the health clinic. So, you know, he was just never honest about it. So they got a divorce, and she's moved on. She's remarried. Her life is going wonderful. But this was her concern, and it really scared me. And I wrote about it this month. There are a lot of Christian women out there who come to me because they're lost with this whole situation. And they have good Christian values, and they want to keep a Christian home. So they go to this site called ChristianMingle.com to meet men. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And no doubt in my mind there might be some very fine Christian men on there, but also her ex-husband's on there, and he met a woman through that. And so here you have some unsuspecting woman who's going with a guy with HIV who you can be sure he hasn't told her. And because they're Christian, he feels that's a free, you know, free card of not having to do anything physically or sexually with her because they're not married. He could explain that away, just the fact that, you know, he has good values. And so now you have another unsuspecting woman who's walking into doom and disaster and possibly getting infected. So I always say, I mean, I understand that I have some really very fine Christian friends who don't believe in having sex before marriage, and okay, I can appreciate that. But I say there's a lot of stuff you can do that isn't actually the sex to see whether or not that man is really interested in you in a straight way. Do you agree or not?
I do, because when I first started dating my ex, the major thing for me was I was very naive. I looked at homosexuality as just sex. But when I look back at even our dating period and the period of our engagement, there was always a subtle awkwardness in our intimate relationships. I remember if I did anything and he was not prepared for it, or he was not in control of it, he would have an involuntary shock or an involuntary, like a resistance. I remember we were riding in the car, and the music was playing, and I reached my hand over to touch his hand, and it immediately got tight. And he explained it away. There were moments where I would, you know, like put my arms around him. Not even whether I was going to kiss him or not, but if I put my arms around him and put my body close to his, he would kind of laugh a little bit nervously and get rigid and say stuff like, "Wait, you know now we can't play with this. We can't, because you know it'll go into something." And he kind of would laugh it off like that, like, "You're so attractive that if I put my arms around you too long, I might lose control."
And so that was kind of like a reverse psychology there. That, look, I'm doing you a favor, because if you would, you know, get too close to me, this is, you know, I'm going to get too excited, so I better not, you know, out of respect to you, right?
Exactly. And so...
And did you believe it?
I did. It's like the part of me that was socialized Christian, with the Christian doctrine that I had, believed it. But my intuition didn't. I just had not been taught to regard it or to view it as such. Because, you know, there's something in us that picks up on when things are off. It's just that if you haven't been taught to regard it and you don't have any facts, you talk yourself out of it. Or you deem it as just a passing thought, a passing inkling, and don't realize that's your intuition that's infecting. And so when I look back at our dating, many times my intuition objected. Because I wasn't taught to regard it, and I was more programmed toward my church's doctrine about things, that's what held up. And
you know,
it overrode my intuition.
Just to talk about that for a moment, I have this wonderful book here. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot. Are you familiar
yes,
with
it? I've heard of it.
Okay. Yeah. It's a really great book, and I read it a lot. And it's always like a guidebook for me. And it's written by, oh, yes, by you, Suzanne Hinton. Right.
Yeah.
And, there is something in here I would like to just read for a moment, because I think this is really playing into what you're talking about. And it says, and this is from chapter 1, didn't your mama tell you not to talk to strangers? And I think this is so important. It says, you notice him browsing the shelves as you ramble through the bin of DVDs. He's fine, you think, as you casually glance his way. Engaging in conversation with other shoppers who join you looking for a DVD or to rent or buy, you don't notice that he's slowly moving closer. That's a good movie, a voice speaks from behind you. When you look back up, it's him. Your heart almost jumps out of your chest. Stay cool, you think to yourself. So you've seen it, huh? You say coyly with a slight smile. Yeah, I was leaning towards this one. Oh, you don't want that one. I don't? Nah, it's okay, but not as good as the other. How do you know what I'd like? He blushes. I'm just suggesting, he says. As you walk out of the video store, you see him in the parking lot leaning against his car. You know what he meant. You know that you want him, but before you turn the ignition, you look up and he's at your window. Your mind races and contemplates what you should do versus what you want to do. Just as sure as he's standing there with his biceps bulging under a moonlit sky, you want to rip his clothes off and get right in there and then. By the time you finish reading this chapter, the DVD might be obsolete. One thing that will never change is attraction. No matter how level-headed you are, attraction can leave you deaf, dumb, and blind. Just the same, the advice my mom gave me when I was a kid is still true for me, the adult. Don't talk to strangers, she warned. When we were out of the park and I was hanging from the monkey bars, my dad would point to someone we didn't know and say, that's a stranger. It didn't matter how nice the person was or how much they patted our heads. It was a stranger. We would stand cautiously behind our parents until they pronounced the person as okay. Even then, I was shy until I was around them enough to feel safe. We paid attention to what our parents said. If someone rolled up in their car while I was walking home from school, I would look straight ahead and not look their way. If they kept hounding me, I would walk to a nearby house and knock on the door. If they saw me do that, they'd soon speed away. The most I recall ever doing was saying, I don't talk to strangers, and kept on walking. Fortunately, I wasn't harmed, but that's not always the case. Predators have become savvier. Even when a parent has been convinced that their little Charlie or little Susie would never go anywhere with a stranger, they've looked on with horror at how easily the child was led by someone who talked nice, showed them a doll, or asked them to help find their puppy. In real-life situations, it could mean the difference between life and death. It is rare, I mean rare, for a child to be returned to his parents. Regardless of the reward or how tearful the plea, more times than not, the news is tragic. Why, as grown-ups, do we put ourselves at risk, and why don't we know better? And this is the part that I think is so important. I listened with horror as a woman told me she had been raped repeatedly by somebody she met out of state. When I asked her why she met someone she didn't know, she said they had been talking online for a while. He was a professional, and she felt confident enough to meet him. When she told me she was also allowing him to pick her up from the airport, I bit my tongue so hard I needed stitches. She was a grown woman, so I didn't want to sound like a parent, yet in my mind, I kept pondering the question, why would you meet somebody you hardly knew? And she's not the only one. I am constantly amazed by the number of women in their 30s, 40s, and even older who nonchalantly put themselves at risk. And I think that, you know, a lot of things you talk in here is also about intuition and having feelings. I don't want to give it all away. But it's so true that we don't protect ourselves, that we don't go with our instincts, that we let others talk us into doing things that we really don't want to do or being in spots that we don't want to be in. And I think that we're easily influenced and always trying to please other people. So even though it's against our initial instinct, that we walk into trouble without really thinking about it. Do you feel that way too?
I do. I really do. I think we get caught up in our hope that it's different. We want to believe that what that person is showing us is who they are, even when our intuition wants to pump the brakes. And our intuition will pump the brakes. If we all think back, there was a moment where we felt a pause inside, but we overrode it in some way.
You know, I am very embarrassed, but I always tell people that people have to learn from each other. But I've certainly put myself in harm's way more than once as an adult who should have known better. But you're always afraid, like you're going to say, well, maybe he won't like me. It's like with my sister. You know, she's looking to meet someone, and she at first was thinking I'm really crazy when I said to her, I want you to make sure you see his driver's license. You know, I want you to ask questions before you meet him. I want to know where you're going. I want him to know you have a family that's watching. And I said that because I learned so much from my own experiences. I know when I first started dating 11 years after my marriage ended and I was finally ready to meet someone, you know, I fell for this guy who I never met. And, you know, when I finally met him, you know, I talked to him for over a month and every day, and then I was willing to meet him. And the thing was that I asked him and I took him at face value. Like you said, we take people at face value because we're trusting people. But when one night he was sleeping, because I started seeing him for a while, and something didn't seem right. So he fell asleep and I went right into his wallet and got his driver's license, and it wasn't who he said he was, and it wasn't where he said he lived. I mean, the first name was the same, the last name was different, the address was different. And I thought, who knows who he is? I mean, if he couldn't be honest with me. And this has happened on several occasions. So women have to watch out. Like you say, there's so many predators out there. And today they are savvy, right?
They are. They are. If they, especially at our age, in our age group, people have become very savvy. They read relationship books like anybody else. You know, they listen to what we're saying. And many times we think they are being attentive, that there is a love connection. No, they just are good at it. They've been around enough to know how to press the buttons and how we think. And I think we do ourselves a disservice if we don't take the time to really get to know that person, to take the time and to ask the question. Because if a person's a good man, they're not going to mind you asking them questions about who they are. You know, we don't have to interrogate them, but we certainly can fashion our questions in such a way that they tell us what we need to know without us even having to ask them directly.
I know, because there are so many con men. And I would say to women, after being married to a gay man, you are very vulnerable. These predators are looking for you because they know that you've been hurt. They know that you're a trusting, caring woman. They know the prototype of woman that a gay man marries. You know, they can see because they themselves as predators, they're looking for women who are going to be accepting of who they are, who feel that their self-esteem is beaten down, their sexual esteem. So it doesn't take much for them to woo you or to charm you. And guess what? You know, I'm not saying you. I'm no better, and I'm no different. You know, I was exactly the same way. So I was really, like I say, putting myself in harm's way. And I just don't know sometimes how to talk women out of being there. I mean, I guess we can keep telling stories and hope that they'll learn something from them and not put themselves in that position. But, like, how do you stop someone? Why would you tell somebody not to answer ChristianMingle.com? Because if you do, you might get a guy who's gay with HIV. I mean, is that realistic? Do you think they're going to believe me if I tell them?
No, and I think it's not just as Christian Mingle. I think any website that you have people on, you have to be very knowledgeable and be able to look at and see the flag in the beginning. Whether the person's
I mentioned Christian Mingle because I think it's different because it is Christian. So the expectations are different. So in other words, if you were at Match.com, I'm not saying there's not a lot of kooks and nuts out there. Believe me, there are. But at least you wouldn't have that need to find someone who's not going to be sexually involved with you because you're a Christian.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what upsets me so much is that people are preying on other people under the name of Christianity to start with. I mean, that's, like, to me, really sacrilegious.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a Christian. But it seems to me like it's something that's godly and you're going in there under God's name. You know, you better be a little godly yourself and not living with this kind of big lie.
Yeah. Well, sadly, there are a lot of people who subscribe to Christianity and read the Bible who don't subscribe to the actual truth and integrity of it. You know, they're like, I believe in God, I believe in the Bible, yet they can lie to you. Yet they can deceive you. Yet they can play you just like anybody else. And that's why I tell, there was a gentleman who really liked me. He used to fix my car, and he was a Christian. And, you know, I could tell in the first 5 minutes of our date that it was not going to work. Even though he said he was Christian and I said I was Christian, it was the simple fact that he was rigid in his thinking and he held himself to such rigidity that I knew I would not be happy with him. I knew that if I shared any feelings that was honest and vulnerable, he would siphon it through a bunch of Bible scriptures, yet not treat me, yet not make me feel safe emotionally with him. And there are a lot of people who subscribe to Christianity who are not whole, who can regurgitate a bunch of rules and regulations, but their hearts are not open. They don't know how to be vulnerable. They don't know how to respect womanhood. All they know is a bunch of rules. And those are some very dangerous people to be married to or in any kind of intimate relationship with because they will never see you. They will only see that you're not and try to fix you.
Or change you.
So sadly, even though I do subscribe to Christianity, And the truth and the essence of it, I would never go to ChristianMingle.com because a lot of the men that I meet, not saying they're all of this way, but a lot of men that I meet are very stilted in their ability to be intimate and to be affectionate because they're so afraid of sinning.
Mm-hmm. That's a scary thought. And while you're staying off of Christian Mingle, while you're staying off of Christian Mingle, can I suggest you stay also off of FarmersLonely.com?
Did you say Farmers Lonely?
Mm-hmm.
There's one called Farmers Lonely.
You're not familiar with that dating service?
Oh, my God. funny. You sure it's called farmerslonely.com?
No, farmersonly.com. If you go to the internet.
Farmers and you only.
Yes, it's for farmers only because nobody understands farmers the way they do. I mean, they have a lot of commercials on TV. I'm surprised you never saw it.
I have not seen that one. I've seen
all right, so if you go there,
I have not seen.
So if you go now to farmersonly.com, it says single in the country, and then you have to, you know, tell them what you're looking for. And then under the bottom here, it says here's what they have. They have American dating, traditional dating, rural dating, Christian dating, and senior dating, right? And,
wow.
Oh, I know. This is a whole new world. I see it on TV all the time. But on the rural dating, which I think is a little strange. Now, you can tell me if you think it's not. If you go to the rural dating, it has animal lover dating. FarmersOnly.com has plenty of members who are animal lovers. Animal lover dating is a niche in itself, and like-minded people can be found on all sorts of sites and forums with shared interests. However, when it comes to meeting someone who loves animals the way you do, the chances are far higher that you will find the person on FarmersOnly.com. For whatever reason animals are farmed, farmers all share a respect of animals that you won't find in other communities. Farming is a calling, a vocation, rather than just a job. Loving the animals that are reared on the farm is part of that. So check out farmersonly.com for a great number of fellow members eager to meet the right person.
Okay. All right. You know, to each his own. Okay, okay. But now, having grown up in eastern North Carolina on a dirt road, where there were farmers, you know, people farmed vegetables and they had animals. Maybe things have changed now, but back then, animals were fed because you were going to kill them. So, you know, like I said, unless things have changed, even, you know, most farm-raised animals are raised to fill our grocery stores later.
Well, not if you're an animal lover. They must not be on that farm.
Okay, all right. That might be true. That might be true.
And, you know, there is a certain kind of person that does fall in love with animals. And I don't think you would want that person either. So that's why I don't think this is the best website for people to look at when you're looking to meet someone. I mean, I think their advertisements on TV are really interesting because one guy talks about a woman he met. He said, I had a 200-mile, you know, limit on meeting someone, and this woman lived 250 miles away from me. But I'm glad I took that extra 50 miles because I met the love of my life. I think that's a little far for dating, 250 miles away.
Yeah, that is. Especially if you need to get to know them up close and personal.
And they have their own merchandise on this website. I'm looking at it now, which I think I'll buy for some of my friends for their birthdays, like farmersonly.com shirts. It says, you and me, front porch sitting. No truck, no luck. A no truck, no luck mug. Our folks only put up with cow. With cow dung, farmers only.
Oh, my God. I'm trying not to fall out of my chair.
Well, like I say, it's a good gift, I guess, to get someone who you're not that fond of. I can't even imagine buying a cup for someone. Oh, now they have the mouse pad, too, for $15. Our folks only put up with cow crap, farmersonly.com.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
When you go on their site, you have to go to their merchandise.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well,
I'll tell you, it's
okay.
A whole new world out there that you didn't even know about, right?
I did not even know, Bonnie. Thank you for teaching me something tonight.
Always glad to open your eyes.
I'm telling you, I have been enlightened.
Yep. There's a lot of stuff going on out there that you just haven't had time to learn about, thankfully, until you talk to me. Like my boyfriend always says, that I've certainly opened his eyes to worlds that he never knew existed. And that he wasn't really looking to find out about either. But I think it's just the human nature of things. So another issue that I wanted to bring up tonight is that my last newsletter, and if you haven't received it and you'd like to get it, you can email me at bonk@AOL, or it's on my blog if you go to gayhusbands.com and you hit into the blog. You know, a lot of it is up on my blog. But I had a tremendous response and outpouring from close to 100 women right now who responded to, I asked for help in there, because I have two letters from men that are just typical letters that I get every week. And I usually get two or three men writing to me for help each week. And a lot of them are very sincere, no doubt. Some of them are coming to me after the fact, where they're looking to get out of their marriages, and the first thing I ask them is, have you met someone? And that's usually the case. In most cases, they've already met somebody, and they want to leave the marriage because they're madly in love with their boyfriends. And I don't really care what the reason is, as long as they leave in a responsible way and leave in the right way. But sometimes these guys just really kind of tick me off a little bit, because they come to me and they're sincere about leaving, but never, of course, for the right reason or necessarily doing the right thing. So one of my letters in there was about, you know, from a man saying, is it really necessary for me to have to tell my ex-wife why? Because we're having a lot of problems, and chances are, you know, we'd be splitting up anyway. And so why is it necessary for me to have to tell her why? And he said, I've heard from a lot of men who are part of the Gay Fathers organization that when you tell your wife that you're gay, then it only means that she's going to go after you more in court or try to use it against you or tell the children, put you in a bad light. So you're better off not telling her. So I asked women, if I have to respond to men, I'd like to give them some of the emotional impact that women go through, you know, when they're going through this whole issue of finding out their husbands are gay and what to do next in their lives and how they feel about it, because, you know, so many things are so sympathetic to the men. The articles seem sympathetic. The movies seem sympathetic. And we just seem like we're little whiny nags, you know, because, oh boy, our husband's gay. And now what can we do to take revenge? That's how the public perceives us, that people are not sympathetic to us. They may look at us in a pitiful way. I don't like that word, pity. I don't like when somebody pities me. But I know it's always with that all-knowing thought that, number one, were you too stupid to see it? Number two, he wasn't gay when he married you. What did you do to make him gay? You know how people are so ignorant on this particular subject. But as far as it comes to, you know, telling your wife, what do you think?
You know, I think it would show a great deal of integrity to tell her. I feel like you owe it to her. I mean, you married her and told her that you were going to, your vows said you were going to forsake all others and keep her only, you know, unto you. And if you aren't willing to do that, aren't willing to abide in what all that means, I think you owe it to her. And in response to the person that was saying, you know, there were already problems anyway, who's not to say that the reason for those problems might be indirectly related to that person not being honest and living a double life and having a different energy about them and causing confusion in the relationship? Who's not to say? Because 9 times out of 10, I would imagine that would be part of what's fueling the discontent in the relationship.
Let me read the letter for you.
Okay.
There's one letter. You know, neither one thought it was necessary to tell their wives, but one was really nice, and he was really more concerned that is going to, you know, hurt the wife. But this guy was pretty much out there, and he said, let me just get his letter. I'm struggling with when to tell my wife and most of the once married straight and now gay guys that I've talked to recommend not bringing up as being gay as far as the reason for wanting the divorce. I think the fear is that it will be more financially costly and the wife will be vindictive, and we don't have the money to hire attorneys. I have heard of instances of this on my journey. The fact that she will be angry and unsympathetic is what worries me most. I want to minimize the impact on the family, and if my announcing I am gay while asking for a divorce will be more painful for all involved, her, my sons, her parents, then I would tend to just address the divorce issue first and deal with everything else later. Her parents know that we have had marital issues over the years, and even they get quite frequently frustrated dealing with her. If she were to tell me she were a lesbian and wanted a divorce, I would understand that as more of a rationale than if I've been a bad husband. It doesn't sound like you think that works with 90% of the women. I would also be comfortable telling my sons any time now, but when we spoke on the phone, you said I should tell my wife first. I don't think they will fly off the handle as she will. So the real question in my mind is, do I tell her I'm gay and then address the divorce issue, or get the divorce and then let her know why? I know this is ultimately my decision, but based on your experience with women, how is it best received and handled by everyone involved? I have many years left to be happy, and I'm very unhappy now, partly because of my relationship with my wife is not fun and positive, largely because of her personality and issues, and partly because I want to be with guys more, and I'm getting increasingly frustrated with the way she treats me and her issues that will not address or get help for, like OCD, neediness, lack of self-esteem, and lack of close friends. So I've contemplated admitting I'm gay in hopes that she will be more understanding of the reason for a divorce. However, my fear is that she will be more angry and vindictive about how could I do this to her versus understanding the situation. Most married guys I've spoken to recommend not making that part of the divorce, as for most have been more painful or because it's not grounds for divorce where I live and therefore will not help the situation but further complicated and give her more to be angry and vengeful about. I would tell my sons, as you recommend, as soon as the divorce is final, and I could tell her, too, that I'm gay. What do you think about all this? Do I really have to tell her? I was planning to divorce her anyway, and that was the letter. And a lot of women got really angry when they read that letter.
Yeah. you know what? I'm not angry, but it doesn't make me feel all warm and fuzzy. It kind of to me, you know, maybe he might mean it sincere, maybe he doesn't mean any harm, but to me, there's a little bit of an arrogance in there. It sounds arrogant. I just have to say it. It sounds arrogant.
That's a good word.
It sounds arrogant because, I mean, you're saying, well, really, it's not so much that you are concerned about her. You're concerned about how she's going to get mad and come after you. You're more concerned about your pocketbook than you are about her.
Well, most of them are. Most of them are concerned about their pocketbook. That's why, you know, they come to me for advice. But my point is this, as I said to him, I mean, I spoke to him in person on a number of occasions, and after he wrote to me, I said to him, let's go back to the part where your wife wasn't happy. Let's start there, that she has issues. Okay, let's talk about neediness. Well, when your husband's emotionally not there for you or physically not there, you do become needy.
Yes,
when it comes
to
lack of self-esteem, how can you feel good about yourself when you're constantly being rejected on some level, right?
That's right.
They create these issues, and then they say, well, I wasn't, you know, we would have had a breakup anyway because she's this. Well, she's this because you made her this.
Exactly.
If you were a warm, loving, affectionate, you know, straight husband, who adored your wife and wanted to be with her and touch her and make her feel good about herself, then would she have to have all that neediness? I mean, let's be for real. But once again, as I tell women, and I'll say it over and over again, gay men do not think straight. You know, we expect to hold these men to a straight standard when they're not straight. They don't think straight. They don't think the way a straight man would think. They are gay men who don't understand the emotional connection of a man and a woman because they are a gay man and they want a man. So, you know, we're expecting them, you know, yes, I am very upset about this letter because it is typical of a lot of letters that I do get from men. I mean, some men are totally different. Some say my wife is, you know, wonderful woman. Like I have the other letter. I'll just tell you what that one was from the first guy. I mean, it may be the same bottom line, but at least he was different about it. He said, "Dear Bonnie, I've been married for 24 years to a wonderful woman. When I married her, I believed we would live together and die together because I loved her so much. Yes, I did have attractions to certain males, but I believe that was normal for teenage guys. One time an uncle molested me at the age of 14 and told me it's normal for all men to experiment. That way they would know what kind of sex they really wanted when they were older. I didn't like him touching me, and thankfully he didn't do anything painful to me like intercourse. I felt so guilty after that, but he was my uncle who loved me, and he was also my mother's brother. I try to put that occasion one time only out of my mind because I was too afraid to tell anyone. When I was 17 or 18, I would see other guys in the locker room in school and sometimes think about how it would feel if they had touched me instead. I then pushed those thoughts away, knowing they were wrong. I wasn't, quote, that kind of a guy. When I met my wife in 1989, I immediately was attracted to her. She was beautiful with long brown hair and green eyes. We both had two of the same college classes, so we were spending a lot of time together. We found we had so much in common, and our personalities really blended well. I had gone out with other girls and dated in high school, but it was casual dating and nothing serious. My wife and I became inseparable, and within the year, we took our vows as husband and wife. Our first decade together was wonderful. We were in our early 20s when we got married and sex was good. We didn't have a lot of it sometimes because we started a family within 2 years. Sometimes we were just too beat to get around to it. I started working extra hours to support the family and was tired a lot at the end of the day. Sex wasn't the first thing on my mind. I guess it wasn't that much on my wife's mind either, although she did bring it up from time to time. By the end of 10 years, there were 3 beautiful children in our lives. I felt so content having a beautiful wife, 3 beautiful children, a good job, a nice house. I was living the American dream. And yet, this dream seemed to leave me feeling unhappy. I couldn't figure it out, so I started taking a few drinks to lift my spirits. My drinking started to cause some arguments in the marriage, so one night I told my wife that I couldn't have a few drinks at home. I'll go to a bar, and he slammed out the door. Don't ask me why or how I ended up at a gay bar. It was the first bar that I saw. I've seen it hundreds of times through the years, but never dreamed of going into it. That night was different. I just needed a drink, and I wanted it quickly. I walked in there feeling nervous, not knowing what to expect. I justified it to myself that a drink was a drink. It didn't matter where you had it. That night was the beginning of me realizing why I'd been drinking all those years. It was to numb the pain I had for still having these gay attractions. Once I realized this was numbing my pain, guess what? I kept doing it. I didn't go back to the gay bar for another 10 years, but I became a heavy drinker. I couldn't let gay get in the way of having my beautiful wife and children. It did cause tension, for sure. My wife and I stopped having sex. She believed it was because of the alcohol. I believed it was because I couldn't keep doing something that wasn't natural to me anymore. As the years passed, thinking about making love to her just became harder and harder, and so we stopped talking about it after a while. I knew she was unhappy about it, but I was unhappy too. I had to give up my happiness to remain a good husband, so if she wanted to keep me there, it came with a price. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but we started growing apart. Our kids were now teenagers, so she was wrapped up in a lot of their activities. I understood because I did work a lot, and I appreciated the fact that she was there for them when I couldn't be. It seemed our communication was just whatever was necessary, and a peck on the cheek was our customary way to say I love you. And I meant it. I did love her. She was a wonderful wife and mother. Was I in love with her? No, but I loved her, and I hoped that would be enough, but it wasn't. One night 2 years ago, I revisited the gay bar. I just felt I wanted to see it one more time, even though I truly believed I was not gay. I sat next to a guy and started drinking. After 4 drinks, he asked me if I wanted to sit and listen to music with him in his car. I said yes. That was the beginning of my new gay life. At first, I just justified it as something, some touching like I did as a teenager. However, within a few months, I couldn't deny what it was anymore. As much as I didn't want to be gay, I couldn't stay away from it. It obsessed me. I had a dozen or so sexual experiences before I met the man of my dreams. He is everything I could possibly hope for, except he can't accept the fact that I'm married. I realize that my marriage is over. Meeting someone who consumes all my thoughts has shown me that I am planning. Show me that. I am planning to tell my wife in the next week or two, but I'm not sure how to tell her. I know that my feelings are not her fault. She has been a wonderful wife. However, even if I didn't meet my boyfriend, my marriage was growing apart more and more. Is it really necessary for me to tell her I'm gay? I don't see how it could serve any greater purpose other than to hurt her and the children. She would probably blame herself, and I don't want the children to feel any kind of stigma because of this. Why can't I just tell her that it's time we move on now that the kids are almost raised and we are both not feeling into it? I know my drinking was a big factor in the decline of my marriage, but I never even acted on the gay until a couple of years ago, and the marriage was already practically over. Please give me your feedback. I want to do the right thing.
Hmm. Well,
it's really not too much better, right?
No, that's why I said.
It was better than the other one, but not really great.
Yeah, because there's still some of the same elements. It's like, okay, I will admit my part, but, and somebody told me is, whatever follows the but,
mm-hmm.
makes the decision for that null and void.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, she was a great wife, but, then whatever follows the but just completely nullifies what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there were certain things in there that still, still had an element of arrogance in it.
Mm-hmm.
It still did. It was just said nicely. And before you were reading it, and you said, well, at least this person sounded kind of nicer than the other one, I thought to myself, isn't that what messes us up? they'll say, well, I said it nice. It don't matter. It don't matter whether you say it nice or you say it mean.
Well, I think it like what these guys keep missing, Suzette, tell me if you think this is right. He's saying that, he's not saying she's crazy or she's this. He's saying she's been a great wife, she's a great mother. So, I mean, he's not like the other guy putting the blame on her. But on the same token, when they say that, you know, they're growing further and further apart, you know, that they don't have the communication, as I explained to him when I spoke to him several times, that maybe you're growing further and further apart because you can't make an emotional connection to her, and she knows it. You know, she's mm-hmm. been slapped down and rejected, and maybe you haven't done it in a volatile way or in a nasty way, but when you retreat from someone, that's the same as getting a slap in the face, wouldn't you say so?
To me, neglect is the other side of the coin of direct abuse. Abuse is one side, neglect is the other. Both of them have devastating effects. Both of them do. And his
mm-hmm.
neglect of her, his neglect of her, for whatever reason, I'm not blaming him, but the truth is the truth. His neglect of her, I'm sure she sensed it. And that's something that a lot of times I think men don't understand. We as women know when our men, when we have our men's heart and when we don't. We know it. We know when something is missing.
Mm-hmm.
We know when something is off.
Mm-hmm.
We do. I don't care what we try to say to keep ourselves in denial. We know if he is not as into us as he needs to be, or as we want him to be, or as he says he is. We know there's a disconnect. We might not know why, but we know something's off. And when a woman knows something's off and there is a disconnect, it is torture to her emotionally. It's torture. So it's going to cause her to react in a lot of different ways. It's going to cause it because it's torture. So these men are not giving their wives, they're not doing their wives a favor. It's going to hurt if he tells her now. It's going to hurt if she finds out later. She's going to still feel had. She's going to still feel played, no matter which way he goes.
I tell men it's like this. If you do jigsaw puzzles and you get a 500-piece puzzle, and somebody would purposely take out a piece and drive you insane because you could never put it together right because something's always missing. And you don't know what's missing. You just know something's missing because the puzzle isn't fitting together. And
mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with these marriages. If you don't tell your wife because you're going to be that selfish that you're afraid of how it's going to affect you, that
mm-hmm.
means you don't love the woman. But I don't believe they necessarily do love us either, Suzette. I think they do their best to love us, but they don't love us in a passionate way or as a wife. They love us like a sister or like an aunt, you know, if they love us at all, if that love doesn't turn to resentment, because for a lot of them, the longer they stay, the more they resent you because they feel
yeah.
like you're trapping them there and you're their jailkeeper, right?
Yeah, and even, and I'm, I don't know what's going on behind closed doors with either of these men. But even my ex-gay husband would have said to anybody, I was a wonderful wife.
Mm-hmm.
I was a wonderful mother. He would have said that to anybody. It still didn't change the fact that in the relationship, I still felt like I was not enough for him.
Exactly.
And I think that becomes the issue. When a man is in love with you, even in your imperfections, you feel like you're enough, more than enough. But when you're in a relationship with a man that's gay or he's distracted, his heart is elsewhere, you always feel like you are not enough, like you are not measuring up, no matter whether he tells you you're beautiful, you're sexy, you're a great mother, you're this, you still feel like you do not measure up. Because of the way he treats you.
Exactly. I mean, I used to tell everybody I was a great mother and a great, you know, wife when we were married. But
mm-hmm.
so what? Then if I'm so great, why don't you want me?
Exactly.
And behind closed doors, he wouldn't say that to me. He would say it publicly. But he would find
yeah.
reason to criticize me because he was trying to get me not to, you know, bother him, God
mm-hmm.
forbid, you know, for anything intimate. So I would go to bed many nights crying myself to sleep while he would be sleeping there soundly, with, you know, like he had no conscience at all, because he was relieved. Where I was sitting there crying, he was relieved that he hadn't have to do something that wasn't natural for him to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was just easier for him to let me cry than to be honest with me and say, look, I am so sorry. I thought I could do this. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he would find something to pick that's wrong with me and then let me suffer the rest of the night while he slept.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
that's part of their selfishness, right?
Yeah, my ex was not as blatantly critical.
Mm.
But he was a crazy maker.
Mm-hmm.
He kept my life so off balance, kept me so busy with different situations that he caused, in hopes that I would be too tired
mm-hmm.
to want intimacy. I mean, he didn't even bathe some days in hopes that I would. It was almost like he would tell me, oh, I'm so glad that you still love me despite, you know, my medical issues and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then he would do things like not bathe, not do different things. Because I think though his mouth was saying he was appreciative, he was using that in hopes that I would not want it.
Exactly. Mine was the same way. He would, when he was going out, I could always tell because he'd be all shaved and showered and he'd smell wonderful. You know, so I always knew that he was out there looking for something that wasn't me.
Amen.
So naturally,
Amen.
That made me feel even more rejected. And when I would say something to him, well, it's nice that you can get all, he says, I don't even know what you're talking about. I always get dressed. I always do this. I always do that. But he didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, now that you've totally depressed me for the night, Suzette.
I'm so sorry, buddy. Forgive me.
No, I know why my ex-husband wasn't showering. But I hope we didn't depress you out there in the audience talking a big dose of reality. But you know what?
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to hear this reality because otherwise it's easy to get lost in the nightmare of what isn't the truth. It's better to know the truth and face it. And then you realize that it's not your responsibility, that you can't do anything to make a difference in these kind of a marriages except save yourself and get out of them, right?
Yeah, and it lets you know that somebody else went through the same thing so that you can say, I knew it, I knew it.
Exactly.
Good.
But I want to remind people about your book again. Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot is a book that you'll just love and find a lot of comfort in because it really tells you life as it is for women who are out there and looking to start over. You know, one of the problems that our women always have is that they're so vulnerable after these marriages, as I mentioned earlier. But it's important to rebuild your life, and part of that rebuilding can be through coaching. And Suzette is a fabulous life coach who can help you in not making the wrong decisions and in doing something that's good and right for you. And more coaching and counseling, and coaching is different because coaching deals with here and now. It's not digging into your past and why behaviors are the way they are. It's focusing on today and what you need to do in order to be happy. Is that a good way to say it?
That's a great way to say it, Bonnie. It's a great way.
So Suzette has two books out. Tell them about your first book, The Sound Book.
Yes.
Sound of My Life.
I've got The Sound of My Life, which I wrote in 2013. It's a book about losing the sound of my voice and finding it again and realizing by finding that my dreams really, really do matter. My second book, which was actually written concurrently with Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot, is The Sound of My Soul. And it looks behind the sound of my life to reveal the soul behind my life. And where the sound was coming from. I present the soul as the gauge, the barometer. I present the soul as the discerner of the sound of your voice. It's the part of you that lets you know whether you're really okay or whether you're not. If it's really your voice or if it's not your voice. So I go a little deeper in the sound of my soul. And, of course, Bonnie talked about the sound of my soul cleanse, which is Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot. And the title is pretty self-explanatory. It's talking about that part of you that is not between your legs but between your ears.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people think it's location, 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 trying to find that physical part of you, which we want them to find it because it's a wonderful part to find. But at the very same time, After being pleasured, there is a loneliness and a longing that comes when you've been taken to that degree of pleasure and stimulation, and then when you come down, that person does not love you. There's no genuine intimacy. There's no genuine connection. And if the G-spot were to be honest and tell you what it's really after, if it really is after true intimacy. So, yeah, those are my books.
So they're all tied in together, right?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They all go inward. They all go inward.
And here's a great suggestion before we go. Is there a reason why people can't find you easier, like at suzettehinton.com?
You know, they can. I've got several websites. There's
yeah, but I don't see that one.
You don't see Suzette? It's Suzette R. Hinton, my middle initial.
How am I supposed to know the R?
Because it's...
I mean, can't you get just by the name Suzette Hinton and have it go over to the other one?
You know, that might be a good thing to do.
People are leaving out that R.
I'm thinking my book says Suzette R. Hinton.
You think what?
I think my books have...
It doesn't matter. Wherever you go, they don't know about the R, and they can't remember it. What does it even stand? What is the R for?
My Randolph, which is my...
Ragdoll?
No, Randolph.
A Randolph?
Suzette Randolph Hinton.
Oh, nobody's going to remember that, Suzette. Just go to SuzetteHinton.com. I looked it up the other day. I meant to tell you. Pick up that domain. And then they can just point it to your Suzette R. Because it'll make it so much easier for people to find you.
Okay.
I'm not going to remember your middle name.
Remember the R.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe I'll remember it now, but, you know, as you get older, it's hard to remember. It's hard enough to remember names, nevertheless, a middle initial.
I know, right?
Right?
That's true. That is true.
I know. Don't forget, a lot of people are old, like me. Well, maybe not that old, but they're on their way there anyway. But I really appreciate your being here, as always. I always feel so uplifted when you are here. And I'm going to look forward to having August come along so we can have you back here again.
Yes.
Give us an update on how your wedding plans are coming along. And I'm just going to end tonight's show by saying love to all of you. And we're going to fade out with another one of my really favorite songs. Maybe you know the song, The Blackbird by the Beatles. I think it's symbolic to all of our women that, you know, you can fly away. I mean, it was kind of a freedom song in the 1960s by Paul McCartney. But I'll play it as we're leaving. And good night to you, Suzette. I love you.
Good night, Bonnie. I love you, too.
Thank you.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night. Dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.